All right, you guys can come on in and grab a seat. I feel like it's been like 5 minutes since I've seen you guys, so. you didn't like that, huh? But it's an honor to be with you guys today. In case you missed announcements, we are taking a one-week hiatus from our Nehemiah series, so I get the honor of teaching today. And today is going to be not obviously out of the book of Nehemiah. It's going to be kind of a standalone message, just almost as like an intermission. And what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about how a relationship with Jesus helps us be authentic and be genuine as we go through life. And I think the idea of authenticity is appealing to us as people because I think if we got honest, every single one of us wants to be fully known and still fully loved and accepted despite our shortcomings and our failures. And I really like this quote from a pastor by the name of Tim Keller. I'm going to read this to get us started here. He says, "To be loved but not known is comforting, but it's superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear, but to have both, that's perfection." But it's not always easy to allow ourselves to be known, because there really is that real fear of rejection, that fear of not being accepted, not being loved, and that can lead us to, you know, wearing a mask, putting up a facade. You know, at church we call it the church mask. You know, everything's hunky-dory on Sunday morning. Didn't think you were going to hear hunky-dory today, did you? Well, you heard it. But that fear can lead us to faking it, essentially. And it's not an unreasonable fear, because I'm pretty sure if we took a poll, most, if not all of us have in this room, have probably felt the pain of rejection, or the pain of not being accepted. So what I'm going to look at today, we're going to look at three ways that a relationship with Jesus helps us face that fear of not being accepted or not being lovable. And then how, in turn, that allows us to be authentic or genuine as we go through life. So maybe you have that fear of not being accepted, and it's rooted in your past. It's rooted in something that, or some things that maybe you've done, or things that are in your past that you feel like, man, if people knew about that, they wouldn't accept me, they wouldn't love me. And it leads to you pretending or faking it. And this actually leads us to our first idea today. It's the first way that a relationship with Jesus helps us fight against the fear of not being accepted. And that's that, number one, Jesus frees us from our past. So normally here, if you guys have been here for a while, we go through just a book study, or we go through a passage of scripture on Sunday is how we typically do it. Today's going to be a little different. It'll be a little more topical. But we are going to be looking at one pretty popular person's life, some aspects of their life. We're going to be looking at the Apostle Paul. And the Apostle Paul is a guy, in case you don't know, he wrote the majority of what we call our New Testament. God used him to write the majority of the New Testament. He also was arguably the most successful missionary ever. But he had some pretty dark stuff in his past. Because before God got a hold of Paul's life, he was like a hyper-religious Pharisee, which is one of the Jewish religious leaders of the day. And he was so zealous that he actually persecuted followers of Jesus to the point of hunting them down, having them thrown in jail, and even approving of them being killed solely for following Jesus. But God had different plans for Paul's life. So Paul meets Jesus, his life is drastically changed forever, and he ends up joining up with the people who he had been previously hunting down. So you can imagine, if there's ever been anyone in the history of the world who had a reason to maybe want to hide their past, it'd be this guy. But we don't see him doing that. You know, we see him actually being authentic. Because, I mean, personally, if it's me, I think it'd be kind of awkward to worship Jesus next to the guy who threw my friends in prison for worshiping Jesus. But that's just me. But we don't see him hiding from it. I'm going to read a couple passages where we see Paul talking in his letters to the churches where he's addressing his past. First, I'm going to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 9, and the beginning of verse 10. Again, this is Paul talking. He says, "For I am the least of the apostles, unworthy to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace towards me was not in vain." And I'm going to read another passage real quick. This is out of the book of Galatians, another letter that Paul wrote, and he's kind of describing what life was like shortly after he met Jesus, kind of for the churches around him. He said, this is chapter 1, verse 22 through 24. He says, "And I was still unknown in person to the churches of Judea that are in Christ. They only were hearing it said, 'He who used to persecute us is now preaching the faith he once tried to destroy.' And they glorified God because of me." So we see an example there of Paul being able to be authentic or genuine about his past because he's aware of the grace he's received in Jesus. And not only is he able to be honest about it, but he's even able to see that God has actually redeemed his past to the point where now people are actually glorifying God by seeing this transformation that's taken place in his life. So Paul didn't have to, you know, he didn't have to hide from his past, and neither do you, neither do we. Because on the one hand, you know, it would have been a little bit silly, admittedly, if Paul had been like, you know, that wasn't me, I didn't persecute the church. You know, that'd be a little bit just dumb, if we're being honest, because it was public. Everybody knew that he had done that. But we're freed up from, so in a sense, he was freed up from trying to hide or try to pretend like he had a good past. And sometimes we can fall into the trap of thinking, you know, my past is still private. No one knows about it, so I can hide it. But in the first sense that we're freed up from our past, we're freed up from pretending like it was good because Jesus went to the cross, which was very public. People in 2019 know about Jesus going to the cross. And what that shows is that it took the death of the Son of God to pay for my failures and for your failures. So we're freed from the need to feel like we need to pretend like we have squeaky clean past, because the word is out. You know, we all need some major help if that's what it takes to help us. But not only that, we're also freed up because we see in Paul's life the example that there's no past that God can't redeem. You know, there's no past. Like, Paul was persecuting Jesus. He was, like, Jesus, when he met him, said, "Why are you persecuting me?" He didn't say, "Why are you persecuting my people?" Like, he was literally an obvious enemy of God, and yet God's able to redeem that past because, you know, God can, he can bring us out of a background of, you know, pride-filled religious background, or he can bring us out of a crime-filled non-religious background. He can bring us out of any background you can imagine, because when Jesus went to the cross, he paid the full price. And it was enough to cover Paul's past. It's enough to cover yours and mine as well. So before I worked here, I've been at Severn for a little over a year now. Some of you guys know this. I worked at Nationwide Insurance. And I was a claims adjuster there, and I will apologize on behalf of all claims adjusters before I go any further, because everybody has some horror story about insurance where at the center of it is like a claims adjuster trying to ruin your life, which we're not all like that. I'm not that anymore, but it's my past. It's my past. I'm free from that. But anyways, at Nationwide, I worked in auto claims, and I was on the investigation side of things. Handling the investigation side, I didn't see a ton or have a ton to do with the estimates or the repairs, but I would get people set up for that, and then I would talk to them through the whole claims process. So I would hear about how the estimate for their vehicle damage went and then how the repairs were going. And one of the quickest ways, one of the surefire ways to ruin someone's claims experience was for their vehicle to be deemed a total loss. And it's such a daunting term. Like, I'm not sure why they haven't softened it yet. Like, your car went to live on a farm. You know, he's happy. He's happy where he is. But no, it's still they still call it a total loss. But what that means, that's whenever they do an estimate and the damage to your car is close to or greater than the value of your car. They just do the math and say, hey, this is going to cost more to fix than this car is worth, so it's not worth our trouble. We're not going to fix it. It's a total loss. And I mention that to say that because of Jesus, there is no such thing as a person who is a total loss. There's no one who is beyond repair, because Jesus looked down and knew what the cost would be for us to be restored. It would cost him laying down his life, and he decided that you were worth it, and he decided that I was worth it. And that's a powerful truth. Yeah, there's some kind of silent clapping going on. I like that. That's a powerful truth, because if you put your trust in Jesus, you are accepted solely based on what he has done, not based on your past. So when we're aware of this acceptance that we have in Jesus, it frees us up. We can be honest about the past that we've lived in, the past that we've had. Even if we're not proud of it, we can still be honest about it. Because Jesus already went to the cross, which shows we all need help, so why not admit it? And that help has been provided in full. So we're accepted based on what Jesus has done, not based on our past. But that, you know, might lead you to the question, well, what about where I am currently? Because if we're honest, it's a lot easier to talk about, you know, problems we used to have than it is to talk about problems we have right now. And so maybe you have this fear of not being accepted, but is rooted in the fact that you think, man, if people knew about my current struggles, if they knew how I was failing right now, they wouldn't want to be around me. I wouldn't be accepted. I wouldn't be loved. And maybe you're a Christian and you're believing the lie that you're the only one, the only Christian who deals with the challenges that you have. Or you feel like you're the only person who deals with the challenges that you have. And you're believing the lie that, hey, if you really trusted Jesus, you would never even think about that. You know, or maybe you're not a Christian and you feel like maybe you've been coming to church for a long time and you just have doubts and concerns, or maybe you're just starting your investigation into who Jesus is. And maybe you feel like, I need to blend in with the church folk. You know, I need to pretend to be better than I am because they're not going to accept me if I don't. You know, maybe there's that fear there. And I just want to say, you don't have to pretend. You know, there's so many people in this room even right now who I know who would love to have an honest conversation with you about where you currently are in your walk with God or where you currently are just in your investigation about who he is. Because you don't have to be at some, you know, spiritual maturity level to enter a church. You know, you can come here as you figure this thing out because guess what? We're all still figuring this out, if we're honest. To some degree or another, we're still figuring this out. And this leads me to our second idea today, the second way that a relationship with Jesus helps us face the fear of not being accepted. And that's number two, Jesus meets us where we are. I'm going to check back in with our buddy Paul, and I'm going to read a passage out of a book called Romans. This is a letter that he wrote to the Christians in Rome at the time. And again, this is Paul talking. He says, "For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I keep on doing. Now, if I do what I do not want, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. So I find it to be a law that when I want to do right, evil lies close at hand. For I delight in the law of God in my inner being, but I see in my members another law waging war against the law of my mind and making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then I myself serve the law of God with my mind, but with my flesh I serve the law of sin." Now this is Paul making a very honest admission, very clear admission. And he's a guy who we can hold him up sometimes as like a superhero Christian who never sinned after he met Jesus, but here he is being very authentic, very genuine about the truth we all know to be true, which is that life is a struggle. And he's saying it's right in the midst of that struggle where Jesus comes down and meets you, because he asks the question, he says, "Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" Like, does anybody pray like that? It's kind of like Shakespearean. It's very dramatic language. But he says, "Who will deliver me from this?" And then he gives us the answer. He gives us the beautiful Sunday school correct answer, but it is the correct answer. He says, "Jesus." He says, "That's who." It's Jesus who steps into our weird mess of a life and says, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest for your souls." It's Jesus who decided to demonstrate his love for us and that while we were still sinners, he died for us. It wasn't once we were worthy of it, he died for us. It's while we were still sinners is when he died for us. And it's Jesus who 2,000 years ago when he walked on this earth was accused of being a friend of sinners. Like, that is good news, because he wouldn't be my friend otherwise, because I'm a sinner. And whenever we realize this, when we realize that he meets us where we are, it allows us to be honest about where we are. But I do want to make a point here that I think it's important to watch out for a danger, because sometimes I think we can take the idea of authenticity or being genuine and see that as an end in and of itself, where we just say, "Hey, man, these are my problems," and we just leave it there, and we just stay there. And then that's not the point of this, because while Jesus meets us where we are, he doesn't leave us there. And I've heard it put this way, it's okay to not be okay, it's not okay to stay there. And that might bring the question in your mind. You might be like, well, hey, if I'm accepted by God because of what Jesus has done, not because of me, then why does it matter if anything changes in my life? And I think there's that's a whole other sermon, by the way, but I think there's an important balance to just distinguish between, or difference to distinguish between being accepted and being approved, or acceptance and approval. Because I have a two-year-old daughter, her name is Reese. Some of you guys know her. And she will always be accepted in my family. And I will always love her, no matter what. She will always be my daughter. I will always love her. However, this might come as a shock to you, but I don't approve of everything my two-year-old daughter does. We already have endless conversations about what's right and wrong behavior. For example, I don't approve whenever she gets a blanket, I ask for a blanket and I hand her one, and she screams in anger and throws a fit because it's the wrong kind of blanket. You know, that's flowers. I wanted butterflies. You know, that's, don't approve of that. I don't approve of her running towards the street. I don't approve of her eating Play-Doh or garbage. And, you know, she doesn't normally eat garbage. I made the joke in the nine that I think it's the flavor of garbage that deters children sometimes, but not always. But anyways, the point is that I care about my daughter, so I don't approve of things that are unhealthy for her or aren't good for her. And in the same way, if you've put your faith in Jesus, God says you're part of his family, you're his children, and he loves you, and there's unhealthy things in our lives that need to change, both for our own good and for his glory. So as we understand this, we can look at Paul again to see that he also talks about the need to change in his life. And this is going to be another letter he wrote called Philippians. This is just one verse I'm going to read out of Philippians. It's Philippians 3:12. He says, "Not that I have already obtained this or am already perfect, but I press on to make it my own because Christ Jesus has made me his own." Other versions will say, "Not that I've already reached the goal or I'm already fully mature." So this is Paul, a guy who, you know, God used to write the Bible, saying, I haven't made it. I haven't arrived. There's still change that needs to happen. And the same is obviously true for us. But I think what's cool to note about what Paul just said is he says, "I press on to make it my own because Christ has made me his own." He's saying that the potential for change actually comes from the fact that you already know Jesus. Because, you know, outside of Jesus, we can make some behavioral modifications. You know, we can start good habits and bad habits, but we can't change our heart. We can't change our desires. Only Jesus can do that. And he does do that as we grow to be more like him and as we put our trust in him. And I think that as we understand this, we understand the fact that Jesus meets us where we are, but there's still change that needs to happen. It allows us to be honest about where we are, honest about the change that needs to happen. And it helps us extend grace to other people because, I mean, if we're being honest, it's so easy to point out where other people need to change, you know? If that was a job, that'd be the easiest job in the world. You know, like, where do these people need to change? Like, go to work, you know, it'd be super easy. But when we see in our own, when our eyes are open and we see in our own life what still needs to change, we can then extend grace to those other people when we notice where they need to change. But, you know, maybe for you, it's not your past that leads you to fear not being accepted. Maybe it's not your present, but maybe you're looking to the future. You know, maybe your fear of not being accepted rests mainly on the fact that you don't feel like when you stand before God that he's going to accept you. And we are all going to stand before God. Maybe that's where your fear is just rooted, is in the future. Maybe you feel like you're really good at seeing all the change that needs to happen in your life, but it just bums you out. You're just too good at it, and you realize that, hey, I'm not going to be able to fix all this. And you think that God is just sitting up there, and he's angry at you, and he's just waiting for you to mess up again. And this is our third and our final idea, the third way that a relationship with Jesus helps us fight against this fear, face this fear of not being accepted. And that's number three, Jesus takes us to the finish line. So we can be honest. When we know that Jesus takes us to the finish line, we can be honest about the change that needs to happen in our life without feeling like we have to have some superhuman willpower and strength to make it happen on our own. Because it's Jesus that takes us to the finish line. It's our hope is not in ourselves or in our own effort. Our hope is in Jesus. And you know, as we're going through life, as we're going through the struggles of life, we can actually look to a finish line that we know Jesus has already secured the prize. We don't know how we're going to get there always, but we know that he's already got that future secured for us. We can know beyond the shadow of a doubt. And I want to read just a real quick verse one more time out of Philippians. This is, again, Paul talking to the Christians in a place called Philippi. And this is Philippians 1:6. He says, "And I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ." He says, "I am sure of this." He's not like, maybe, maybe not, if you do good enough. He says, "I am sure of this, that he who started the good work is going to complete it." So it's Jesus started the good work. He's the one who's going to complete it. And that means that we can be sure beyond the shadow of a doubt that when we stand before God, we'll be accepted based on what he's done. And that can affect our present in a drastic way. Because as you understand that you're already accepted, you can live out of that as opposed to trying to earn that. It changes your behavior from being just religion, just trying to put God in your debt, trying to earn God's favor, and it switches it around to where now if we understand that we're accepted because of Jesus, we can then live a life of obedience born out of love for God, not born out of trying to get him to do stuff for us. And I mentioned it to 9. I'm always done really quick, so hopefully you guys like that. But I'm going to call up the worship team. I'm going to call up the response team now. So you guys can come on up, and we're going to wind down. So, you know, so what do we do with this? What do we do with this teaching? You know, you guys showed up probably expecting Nehemiah week 4. Didn't get that yet. But what do we do with this? And I would suggest two things. First, I would suggest press into Jesus. Get to know him better. If you don't know him at all, get to know him. And if you know him, get to know him better. Spend time getting to know Jesus, who in him we have acceptance that goes beyond any level of faking it could ever get us, beyond what, you know, any approval from man could ever get us. So get to know Jesus. Press into him. And if you're starting your investigation, start there. Start your investigation about Christianity at Jesus. Don't start anywhere else. And number two, as we understand the acceptance we have in Jesus, it frees us up to do the second thing, which is press into people. You know, be honest about where you've been, about the struggles you have, and about the change you want to see in your life. And at the same time, extend grace to other people, no matter where they've been, no matter where they are, what kind of change they need in their life. so that they might actually talk to you about those things. But I do think it's worth noting, you know, there's wisdom in using discernment whenever we meet somebody. You don't need to dump all your baggage on them the first time you meet them. But we never have to pretend to be something that we're not. Because while we might impress people with our strengths, it's through our weaknesses that we connect with people. And I can't think of a better example of that than Jesus himself, who allowed himself to be made weak to the point of dying on a cross for us so that we could connect with God, so that we could have a relationship with God. So maybe today, you know, maybe today's the first day you realize I have been living behind a facade. I want to start getting honest with people. Maybe reach out to some close friends and start talking to them. Or maybe today you realize, hey, I don't know what I think about this Jesus thing. I have these doubts and concerns. But maybe you start that conversation. Voice those doubts and concerns. Talk to your friend who invited you here. Talk to your small group leader. Come up and talk to our response team. That's what they're up here for, to talk with you and pray with you. Because at the end of the day, we all want to be fully known and fully loved. And Jesus, fully knowing everything about you, knowing you better than you know yourself, showed that he loves you more than anybody else by going to the cross for you. And you can put your trust in him today. And if you've already put your trust in him, take hold of that acceptance that we have in Jesus, where he frees us from our past, he meets us where we are, and he takes us to the finish line. Thanks.